The 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
Welcome back to the programme. We're into the second hour of the show. A caller says, tell Greg there is a text system, but patients need to agree to sign up to it. The amount of people that don't turn up for appointments is crazy. People say they don't get appointment letters, but funny, they get the letters to say they didn't turn up and then are removed from the list. Okay, thank you for that. Every day is a learning day. I appreciate it. Hi, Greg. Was heading out the door yesterday and heard you say TD's raise. Just to add that it was 109,000, not 109 euro. I don't think TDs know how much a pint of milk is, let alone an increase of 109 euro. Sure, back when Minister Finance Brendan Scowlin-Howlin was chasing down unpaid dole ball bills, the rest is history. Fair play to Connell and that community for being proactive in trying to push the council to build social housing. The council has its head in the sand. Over 1,000 council houses of mica. They have known this for almost a decade, yet hardly a social house has been built, and there are no plans as to how it intends to rectify its own mica-affected stock issue or to house council tenants while demolition and repairs take place. Added to this, the council mortgage system is a joke. To qualify, a person must have been refused for a mortgage twice by a bank. Then, when you apply for a council mortgage, they say that their qualifying criteria is more stringent than banks. So essentially, the person refused by the bank will also be refused by the council. So the council mortgage system, similar to the mica redress scheme, is there in name only, but not a real solution. I'm not sure of all the details in that, but I'll take the listener at their word until someone corrects it. And of course, some people refer to it as the mica scandal or mica houses, but we know that is just one element of it. And there are a series of... it's just the moniker that's been attributed to the scandal, but I think people know it's much deeper than that. Greg, phone call on a Friday evening for an operation on a Tuesday. Requested for a consultant to contact me as to how, what for, as I had no notion. Still waiting for a phone call. Easy, all public bodies need a cost manager now. There is no hope for young people. My son and his family are in a private rented house, and up to now he's paid 80,000 in rent. That can't be right. Oh, yes, he's paid 80,000 in rent. Totalling the rent is paid, I get you. He got a letter to say the rent's going up to 250 euro per week in a year. They're trying to save for a mortgage or the deposit for a mortgage. This is a complete and utter joke. How the hell do you save when paying this rent and they have to pay all this rent themselves? Yeah, I don't know how it might... if paying rent counted more to your ability to pay a mortgage, if it was considered more, maybe it would not feel as much like dead money as some people might feel it will. I'm not sure if that's realistic or how that might help, but do you understand what I'm trying to say there? Just to mention about the Gaelic football games at the weekend, the game between Ardragh and Gweedore and Glenties and Kilcar, both nearly on at the same time, and also couldn't stay very neutral. It's a pity wasn't made a double header in some venue, as this way you can't be in Falkara and Fincher at the same time. No, clearly you can't. And there are a lot of neutrals out there that just want to go and watch a big game. So I hear what you're saying and understand exactly where you're coming from. Good morning. Don't you think it's a disgrace that there's an inheritance tax? The UK are talking about getting rid of theirs, like a few other countries in Europe. Ours increases year on year, and it's never mentioned. We do mention it from time to time, often during our conversation with our legal questions. Thank you to that gentleman for highlighting the issue or care packages. It would be great if Highland could speak to the manager of CHO1 to explain why they're not actively sorting out the vital service. The hospital on any given day of 20 plus delayed discharges waiting on community services. A lot of people are granted home care packages, but not in place, it seems. Have to wait until someone passes on before the next person in line gets the package started. I think that's a conversation that was happening with Donal on Monday or Tuesday, just catching up on some comments there. Now, as we head into the break, happy 21st birthday to Ola McTaggart in Ballyar Remelton from Mary Campbell in Glen Carr. And also, could you play a special request for Zara Holmes, Performing Arts Academy cast, who take to the stage tonight in the CPI Centre in Castlefin on their opening night of Matilda. Best of luck to them all from the backstage ladies, and best of luck to all of them from us as well. It's a fantastic achievement from those that are organising it and all the young people and others taking part as well. Right, OK, back with more after the bingo numbers. It's jackpot day, by the way. And just to remind you that we run the bingo here in association with the National Council for the Blind of Ireland, and your participation in it contributes greatly to the work that they do here in Donegal, raising. It's one of their principal fundraising drives as well. So fair play to you if you're playing the bingo. You could win the jackpot today or the daily cash prize, but you are definitely supporting the National Council for the Blind of Ireland. And you can start playing at any stage, by the way, so you can get your books today for next week. It's just €1 a day to play, and there's hundreds of euro given away every day. Now, traveller children are still being segregated in school. A North Cork report finds our education system is still back in the 60s, where they segregate members of the travelling community. A comment by Senator Eileen Flynn, who joins us on the programme now. Good morning to you, Eileen. Thanks for taking the time to chat to us today.
Good morning, Greg. Thanks for having me on the programme this morning.
Now, this story down in North Cork, while shocking, I imagine it's not surprising to someone in your position. I'm sure you're contacted with similar stories.
Yes. I would know that this is the case for traveller children up and down the country. The one in Cork, it's positive that this has come to the attention of Minister Foley. But again, for the children, for families, for travellers in general, you know, this is not one bit surprising. And I think this is only one example that there's other schools yet to be, if you want, to be not found out, but to come to the names to be brought to us, because there's many traveller children in Ireland today that's still colouring down the back of classrooms. There's many traveller children that's been brought out and all put in one room. There's many traveller children that don't get homework, that's on reduced timetables. Last week there was a report launched by the department where they see 4% of traveller children in primary school are on reduced timetables, over 12% in secondary school on reduced timetables, and over 24% in special schools on reduced timetables. Now, my reading of the report, it's more of a punishment. You know, it doesn't matter what community a child is from, a child is a child. And we do have some children that say have ADHD or behaviour issues or problems. You know, we have to deal with those problems as professionals, and not to punish children, and especially not to punish children and the marriages of society.
And this would be completely unacceptable if it was another minority. All children should be treated equally. And if they require special attention or special assistance, which many children do, regardless of their background, that is how they should be cared for, not because of their background or ethnicity. It's hard to believe we're having this conversation in 23.
In 2023, is absolutely scandalous that we're having this. And again, it's disheartening. And you know, for me, Greg, you know, I go back and forward to the site that I come from, the site that I belong in Dublin, and to see that my brother's kids is treated less, to see that members of the community that I was born and reared in, and I know is one of the best communities like in the world when it comes to love, when it comes to family support for each other, you know, and yet like for our children to be treated less, and that genuinely happens from the cradle to the grave for members of the traveller community. It's something that the community is used of, and it's not even surprising some of the comments say from politicians, from ordinary people on the streets, both members of the traveller community. It's very tough, like, and it's not a sad story, but in 2023, that segregation, you wouldn't see it anywhere else except in a country like Ireland that's full of scandal, that the members of the traveller community still get treated this way. And it's not just like adults, people who's able to deal with this, but it's children. We're talking about a primary school children not having equality of opportunities. Again, there's no such thing as equality, but equality of opportunities to reach your full potential. And to be fair, Minister Foley is probably down my list when it comes to ministers of communication, to be able to have dialogue with myself, with some of the traveller organisations. And we're 2 years, well, 4 years almost, working on the traveller history and education bill, a cultural bill. And thankfully, Deputy Pringle brought us through the door for me and a LATO system, and we're lucky that it came out because the bill would have been just left go. So now for the last 2 years, it's been in the Education Committee, and the Minister has no political will to look at the bill, to introduce traveller history and culture into subjects within secondary schools, and it's very, very challenging. You know, it's really challenging to see a minister.
What's really quite sad too is that, you know, we're hearing reports that as a result of issues like this, that parents are masking the identity of their children or trying to hide their traveller background. And then I suppose as they mature, we also hear stories of adults also doing the same to try and get employment opportunities. Yeah. It's an awful start to a young person's life.
It is.
That they have to deny who they are.
Yeah, I was once that young person, Greg, who in one case used my teacher's address to see could I get a job. And that's absolutely appalling, to hide your identity, to not even accept yourself because you're just looked at as dirt in a certain extent to the state. And that's all driven by policies, by legislation, by our government, the previous government today. And, you know, like for me, I was 25 years of age when I first kind of said, you know, I'm not the problem. I used to always be not in denial, but, you know, never wanted to speak about me community because of how we were viewed in society and not having that equality of opportunity. You know, it's always a topic around the table. Oh, you're a good traveller. You're a member of the traveller community. I have a member who's a friend. I have a member of your community who's my friend. But I like travellers. But it's similar of saying I'm not racist, but... You know, but when we hear the but, that's when, like, you actually are racist. Yeah, you are prejudiced towards the traveller community. It's really about meeting children where they're at, meeting families where they're at. And unfortunately, we don't have that in Ireland today. And to see it, it's not only that it's sad, but those children are denied a quality of education in this country.
Eileen, that's tweeted about this, but you switched the replies off. Why?
Oh, Greg, I get so much shite from people on social media, not just like any ordinary politician. I get it because of my background. I get it because of the way I speak. I'm from a very working class area in Ballyfermot, and then I've been living in Donegal for nearly the last 6 years, and I'm also a member of the traveller community. So obviously my dialect is very different than other politicians, you know. So it's constantly how I dress, how I look. I've never took drugs in my life, and people have often said I was a drug addict or a man methadone, and I get this constant on a daily basis. And, you know, if you stop to throw stones at every dog that barks at you will never reach your destination. And this is not about me. Thankfully, I'm educated. I know how the system works. I know how policy and legislation works, and I know what's right and what's wrong, and how this state is treating travellers is wrong. And I'm trying to challenge that every single day. But again, you're not an ordinary politician. You're also a member of the traveller community. And, you know, I've said this before and I will say it again, no matter what members of the traveller community will do, no matter what you will go on to be, in many cases, to many people, you are just a member of the traveller community. You are just. And this is why we need to normalise traveller education, travellers having equality of opportunities in school. We need to normalise travellers being in the guards, in the army, nurses, doctors, and being part of society. I know many travellers that are doctors, that are nurses, that's working in law firms, but unfortunately can't be open about their identity.
All right, it's a sad state of affairs, but it's a reality, as you've outlined there. Senator Eileen.
Minister, before we go, okay, Greg, I would love to see Minister Foley being able to have an interest just in traveller children having a proper quality of education in this country. And actually, we did write in yesterday looking for a meeting with the Minister. Unfortunately, we haven't got a reply yet. And again, I'd love to see her being more proactive. We're not asking for much for our children. our action is that traveller children are treated with dignity and respect, and that their human rights and equality is met in this country.
Senator Eileen Flynn, thank you for your time. 08660 25000 WhatsApps and texts. Hi, Greg. The hotels are going to price themselves out of it in Ireland. Looking to book a hotel this Saturday coming in Donegal for myself and my wife for one night. How much would you say a hotel in Donegal is this Saturday night? €269. Now, I know it's Saturday night and it's peak, but that's tasty. And not in a good way either. Greg, take a few drinks and a bite to eat and some fuel into the car. You'd be into €500 for your night out. Not a hope, they say. I hope the social housing site doesn't impede the view of the Kilcloonie Dolmen from any angle, as it's a global importance. Okay. I'm amused by the inquiry as to whether it's busy at ED this morning. Does that mean if Highland Radio announces that it's not particularly busy, this individual pop in? The clue is in the name, accident and emergency. Well, I would read that differently, to be honest with you. I would say they have to go in and they're trying to get a sense of what their experience might be and how long they might have to wait. I don't think they've chipped a tooth and just want to go in and have it looked at. I would say they are, perhaps it's an older person in the family and they're trying to prepare them for what experience they might be likely to have. I would say that's far more the motivation than whether or not they might decide to pop into the ED or not. But as I say, you could be right and I could be wrong, but that would be my guess. You're welcome back to the 9 till noon show. You may have heard Donal right at the top of the show talking about an event taking place at the Aviva Stadium tomorrow. Well, the National Relay for Life Celebrate and Remember, raising funds for cancer research in Ireland, will take place at the Aviva tomorrow night. At the opening of the National Relay for Life event, a performance of a new song, The War, will take place live on the main stage as part of a set with the Donegal Relay for Cancer, Relay for Life Cancer Survivors Choir. That song will be sung by Amy Meehan. Good morning to you, Amy. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Good morning.
And it was written by Rachel, a coach. Good morning to you, Rachel. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Greg.
We'll start with you, if that's okay. Are you a musical person, a performer, a songwriter, or was
yes.
this born from your experience?
Well, a bit of both, Greg, to be honest. I've been performing my whole life, mainly on the local musical circuit, but this song came about because I'm a cancer survivor myself. I was diagnosed with breast cancer in 2018, and I was in treatment for about a year and a half, and following that I joined the Donegal Relay for Life Survivors Choir. Our mutual friend Donal Kavanagh roped me into the choir, and they're a great bunch. But basically, the year that I joined the choir was during the time of COVID, so I didn't get to go to a proper live relay event until after COVID. So I went to my first live event in 2022, and it inspired me so much that I decided to go home and have a think about writing a song, and the words and lyrics just came very naturally. Mm. And penned the song and did a demo of it myself, playing all the instruments at home, and it was a little bit rough around the edges. And then Donal very kindly teamed me up with Amy here, with a view to getting the song recorded so that it could be released as a charity single.
We'll pick up from there. Amy, when you were contacted,
yes,
talk to me about that.
Well, Relay for Life is a great event, and I've been taking part in it since I was about 13 years old. So I've been a part of it for a long time, but Donal contacted me and the choir asked if I would accompany them with piano for this past year's Relay for Life event, and I obviously agreed. I was more than happy to help out. Cancer, unfortunately, has touched my family quite a lot. My cousin Shane passed away at the young age of 17 from cancer, so I wanted to help out as much as I could. Look, then what happened was I was contacted by Donal and was told about this song, and I had a listen to it and I just thought it was fantastic, just mm-hmm. the words of it and all of the instruments, and there was just great potential there. And then I was unbelievably asked to sing the song, mm-hmm. and I thought, this is just brilliant, and I offered to record it in my own wee home studio. I've never done something this big before in the studio, so it was a great opportunity for me and a brilliant challenge as well, mm-hmm. but it turned out well.
And the performance, is it you on your own or...?
So it's me on main vocals. Rachel comes in at a few different points in the song with her own parts and her own lyrics. It's also got multiple different musicians playing in the background. So the track has piano. I've played the piano on the track. It has cello, violin, mandola, timpani. It has flute on it as well. It has everything on it and it's just brilliant. It also has Moya Brennan featured on the harp.
Who's that?
I know, it's unbelievable.
That's all right, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's not a bad collab.
We were very fortunate, Greg, that Moya came on board after we had the song recorded. Yeah. She very kindly offered to add harp track and harmonies to it. And that was a huge honour for me personally because I've been a massive fan of Clannad since the age of 12. I mean, she's iconic. So she was very, very kind and generous with her time, as was Amy. Amy spent countless hours in the studio tweaking the track. And then Moya also got her son and daughter, Aisling and Paul Jarvis, on board to help with mixing and mastering
as well.
Right,
so this has got a bit crazy now, right? Because you wrote a song because... I want to talk a little bit about your experience. I think it might be helpful to people out there today because it kind of goes against some of the narratives that's out there in terms of pain and what stuff. So we might touch on that if that's okay with you. But is it a bit surreal now when you wrote this down? I presume that, you know, it was also cathartic, isn't that what they say
Very
for you
much,
and all that kind of stuff, right? But then that it's got to this stage whereby now you're talking about, and thankfully, thanks to Moya Brennan for providing... is it surreal to you that it has become what it has? And how recognisable is this song now compared to what you initially envisaged?
I suppose it's very much recognisable because it has fulfilled my vision of what it could be, with thanks to Amy and Moya and her family. But I always had a very clear vision of how I wanted the song to sound. And we had a very good team of local musicians who came on board to help us realise that as well. But I suppose I never thought it would get to this point, but at the same time, I had always wanted it to be something that I could use as a means to give something back, because Relay for Life and the Irish Cancer Society have done so much for me personally. The process of writing the song was very cathartic for me. And I think you're right when you say it goes a little bit against the grain in terms of the narrative, because I've always been very, very honest about how difficult cancer is. And I don't like when people put a gloss or a sheen over it and it's all pink ribbons and happy faces of people in the chemo chair with the bald head. And I've always said, you know, cancer is very different to that. And I tried through the lyrics of the song to say it's really, really tough, but there is hope.
Yeah, and I think too, my approach to when dealing with either someone close to me or not who has cancer is it's very individual to that person. And I think an awful lot of their experiences reflected in their personality or their approach. And we really get an interesting insight into yours as well. So November 2018 is when you were diagnosed, but there was some sort of what you felt were red flags in the years leading up to that. Intermittent pain, which is not necessarily in conversations commonly associated with breast cancer. So talk to me a little bit about that.
Yeah, so for 2 years prior to my actual diagnosis, Greg, I had had this pain in my left breast and I had gone to the local breast clinic and was told it was just cyclical pain and not to be concerned about it, to take evening primrose oil. And the pain just didn't go away. It just got progressively worse. And luckily, I trusted my gut. I listened to the voice inside me saying there's something sinister going on. And I went back to my GP and was referred back up again. And I was told again, you know, pain isn't usually associated with breast cancer. It's not a normal symptom of breast cancer. But luckily, they did further checks that day. And within a couple of hours, I was told I had cancer.
Were you angry?
I was, if
I'm
honest.
You'd lost 2 years of potential treatment there?
I did, but I was told, obviously, that the cancer hadn't been there for the 2 years, but I know myself that it was.
Well, your gut is still there, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you're listening to your gut.
Yeah.
It would be a remarkable coincidence if it weren't. So what What was your reaction to those words then? Had you in some way subconsciously prepared yourself for it, or did it just hit you like a train?
It hit me like a train. It was like a tsunami of emotions. And to be quite honest and frank about it, I did fall apart. I didn't cope with it well at all. I went into a bit of a tailspin. And
well, that's, I mean, that's initially, but also that's exacerbated too by your reaction to treatment as well, because presumably things moved very quickly from there. Your treatment experience was particularly nasty.
It was. Now, I suppose I can't compare to anybody else. Other people have much worse experiences than I did in some respects. But for me, I can only say that my experience was very tough and was exacerbated by the fact that I couldn't really tolerate a lot of the supporting medications that were given to me. So even the very innocuous drugs that they give you to try and counteract the chemo, for example, just went for me in a big way, and I couldn't handle it very well. So yeah, very tough.
So you moved on to the operation. You opted for that, for the surgery. It had also spread to lymph nodes. Referred back to chemotherapy, fiddled with the drug combinations a little bit. Did things improve for you at all at that point?
Very slightly. I mean, the first round of chemo that I had, I couldn't tolerate it all, and I was hospitalised after two cycles both times for a week or 2 weeks. So when I tried chemo a second time after surgery, they changed my drugs, and they were still really what I would call intolerable for me. But after one cycle, I was ready to give up again. I just didn't think I could go through. I felt like I was dying. But I managed to get 9 doses into me at a reduced dose, where they had recommended 12 full strength doses.
Yep. So. Now, often what we hear with people's journey through cancer, there's no other way to describe it. And now that word annoys some people now, and even those who've gone through the journey as such, is, and it's a little bit about like mental health, is that because we want positivity. So someone's diagnosed, they go through a difficult period, they come to terms with it, they you know, become really strong, they battle through that, they come out the other end, okay? But it's not really like that for you, because the news itself affected you and your mental health very, very severely.
It did,
Do you know what I mean? And it sounds to me that there were times you thought, well, is this process really worth the outcome, i.e., which is very, very difficult. So how did you deal with the anxiety, the fear of death, I suppose the impact you might have on other people, you being, you know, depressed? Like, how long were you in that hole for, and what helped you out?
Basically, right throughout my whole treatment, Greg, I struggled with my mental health, because the physical symptoms were so overwhelming and so intolerable. I didn't feel like a human being right throughout my treatment. So I suppose right through to the very end, I struggled with my mental health until it was over, until the physical symptoms had abated a little. I'm still in treatment now, but it's not active treatment. So while it's very tough, it's not as tough as the active treatment. But I suppose I reached out for help from every source available. I was very lucky that the local Cancer Care West Centre were very supportive and helpful, as were the Irish Cancer Society, who offered a whole array of supports to me to get me through my treatment. And I also looked for help for my mental health as well while going through treatment, and received counselling.
Another thing too, when people, you know, they go through the initial treatment, and then they are told, look, it's in remission, or whatever the phraseology might be individually. Different people react differently to the fear of it coming back. Are you more disposed to anxiety of the bounce back because of you know, the way you are? That's how I would be, you see. Other people might go, well, you know what, if it comes back, we'll do it. I would be living every day going, yeah, Is it now?
I'm terrified.
Is it going to be tomorrow?
Yeah, to be honest.
Which I don't think is talked about enough.
It's not. There is a terrible fear. I'm on a forum with a lot of other breast cancer survivors. Thousands of us are interacting on this forum on social media. And the pervasive theme throughout the whole chat of everybody, regardless whether we're talking about symptoms or feelings or anything, is the fear of recurrence.
And do you know who they probably can't talk to? Himself or herself, mom and dad, the kids. They can go to that forum and do it, but you have to be so strong, and everything's going to be great. And
yeah.
Mommy's better. And I think a lot of women internalise that. And thankfully, there's spaces like the one you're on where perhaps you can just let go and say,
That's it, because it is terrifying. And I'd be lying if I said I don't wake up every morning wondering, is today the day? And every little twinge or pain that you get, you wonder, is this it? Is it back? You know, and you're told by the doctors that there is a likelihood, that a very strong likelihood that it is going to come back. And hopefully the medication you're on will prevent it, but it may not. So it's a daily thing. And
I think the days too where the doctors would say something really positive and send you out the door with a skip in your step have kind of abated a little bit because of the litigious nature of society and all that type
That's
of stuff.
It.
So you won it. Can you put that in writing that I'm perfect for the rest of my life, please? But unfortunately, that's not the lived reality. And I'm sure then there's waves of that, and then you get on with it and carry on with everything else that you're doing as well too, Rachel.
That's it. You forget at times, but then it's always there lurking in the background.
Yeah, of course. And as I say, it doesn't mean there's no hope or no positivity, but it's just a reality that I think people don't want to talk about as much as perhaps they should, and it's clearly happening in safe spaces like the groups you were involved in. Amy, just wanted to get we haven't forgotten you're here.
Wanted to get more
of a background to Rachel, because I know there's people listening and her words will resonate with them as well. And I think if you feel understood, it can help people as well. So it just really emphasises the importance of this. The words, what was your reading of the song, Amy? You know, as a composer yourself and as a musician of great renown, how would you equate, is it the honesty of it? Is it the reality of it?
Well, it's honest, but it's also, it focuses on the hope as well. You know, it's really just about the hope, and it's winning the war. So everything Yusuf just talked about, it's about the positivity that you have when you're dealing with all of that. And it's more like an anthem for Relay for Life and all of the hope that it promotes as well. It's just, it's such, when you hear the words and listen to the words about Letterkenny Skies is what you wrote at the start because of how you felt here in Letterkenny when you were at that Relay for Life event. It's just all Rachel's, it's her child. It's her making. And it's just fantastic. I think everybody can relate to it. And if you are ever at Relay for Life, on the night with the candles,
everyone's just the same, doesn't it?
Just like a beacon of hope. It really is. And that song just promotes it so well.
Yeah. And you're not a candidate. Oh, pardon my ignorance, Rachel. I don't know you, but it's like, I didn't think, if I'd have had this interview before I knew you were involved in Relay for Life and it was important to you, it didn't necessarily sound like you'd be a candidate for the sharing and for the leaning into it and the candles and the park and the, you know what I mean?
I get what you're saying. I suppose because I've been very vocal about how tough my own journey was, I'm not really somebody that you would obviously think of would be into the whole gathering together and let's all, you know, do this for charity. But I really, underneath it all, I think what I wanted to do was to spread the message that as tough as it is, if people come together, there's a big picture here. Yeah. And if we all, you know, come together in solidarity, we can achieve something. Mm. If everybody's at home in their homes thinking their individual thoughts about, I'd love to do this, I'd love to do that. I just went in there and I did it. I wrote the song. I said, I want to donate this to Relay for Life, whatever money it makes. And as Amy says, you know, it is all about hope at the end of the day. I mean, the song deals with the themes of battle and war. And for me, the battles signify the individual battles that people face against cancer every day. And unfortunately, not everybody wins those battles. But the bigger picture is the war against cancer.
Yeah, I get you. And we're all little soldiers, I suppose, to some extent as well. And you've got your gut to rely on too, which you know now to trust implicitly.
Absolutely.
Not that part of your brain that sort of maybe wants you to not. Okay, so anyone who's in the Aviva tomorrow night is going to get the pleasure of hearing it live. We're going to hear it off the computer, unless there's anything either of you want to add, Amy, because I kind of...
No, it's fine. It's just this song represents a lot. And, you know, even for me singing it, I was so happy to be asked and I was so happy to be able to give the time that I gave and to make something so beautiful. And I hope everyone can relate to it.
And I think you're really proud of it too, Rachel. Your part in it and part everyone.
Yes, and we're hoping as well, Greg, that people will get on board and download it on iTunes, because that's how we're going to make money for the Irish Cancer Society and Relay for Life. And just a big word of thanks to Amy for all of her help with the song as well.
So it's called The War. On iTunes, is it under Amy Meath?
It's under Rachel and myself. So just look up the song The War, and it's written by Rachel, a coach.
And okay, brilliant. Listen, Amy, thanks as always for calling in. Rachel, it's been lovely speaking to you.
Thank you, Greg.
And a really positive reaction to your story too, because as I said, it has a great impact on others. And I think in your whole, like your story, there's little time, like, you know, the Irish Cancer Society, and then your interactions with Amy mm-hmm. and all that kind of stuff. There's been, people have had quite an influence
they
along
have.
The way, haven't they?
They have indeed, yes.
Yeah, okay. Wonderful stuff. Here we are. This is The War. Okay, that's Amy Meehan, The Wall, with Rachel, a coach, and also you can hear Moya Brennan there on Brennan, and a whole host of other excellent musicians. They're performing that live tomorrow night at the Aviva.